Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 28th day of September, Anno Domini 2019, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour. We're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news. On Monday, here we go again. On Monday, Microsoft released an emergency security update to patch a vulnerability in Internet Explorer, the legacy browser, predominantly used by commercial customers. I was going to say something rude, and I won't. The flaw has already been exploited by attackers, making a classic zero-day vulnerability actively in use before the patch is in place. In the security bulletin that accompanied the release of the IE patch, Microsoft labeled the bug a remote code vulnerability, meaning that a hacker could, by exploiting the bug, introduce malicious code into the browser. Remote code vulnerabilities, also called remote code execution flaws, are among the most serious. That seriousness, as well as the fact that criminals are already leveraging the vulnerability, was reflected in Microsoft's decision to go out of band or off the usual patching cycle to plug the hole. Traditionally, Microsoft delivers its security updates on the second Tuesday of each month, the so-called Patch Tuesday. The next such date for that will be October 8th or in 2 weeks. In the web-based attack scenario, an attacker could host a specially crafted website that is designed to exploit the vulnerability through Internet Explorer and then convince a user to view a website, for example, by sending an email. The bug is in IE scripting engine, Microsoft said, but they didn't elaborate. Microsoft posted severe security updates for Windows 10, Windows 8.1, Windows 7, Windows Server 2019, Windows Server 2016, Windows Server 2012 and 2012 R2, Windows 2008 and 2008 R2. All still supported versions of IE were patched, including IE9, IE10, and the dominant IE11. So those of you still running Windows XP with IE 6 or 7, you have this vulnerability. It's not being patched. IE was demoted to second class status, second citizen status with the introduction of Windows 10, but Microsoft has been adamant that it will continue to support the browser. IE, particularly IE 11, remains necessary in many enterprises and organizations for running aged web apps and internal websites that nobody has bothered to update. The browser may retreat to a mode within a vastly reworked Microsoft Edge and the standalone abandoned, but IE will live on in some form, particularly since it's deeply embedded in the NT operating system, which is still at the heart of Windows 10. Still, it's no longer the most popular kit on the block. According to the latest data from web analytics vendor Net Applications, IE accounted for just 9% of all Windows-based browsing. For comparison, Edge's all-around share of Windows was at 7%. So if you have a little more that you want to say about this, in the forums under the show discussion, it's still under the show discussion, 28 September 19, IE emergency security update. And why are you even still using Internet Explorer? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. And oh, by the way, just as a little bit of information, the poll is back. I got salty last night about 10:30, 11 o'clock, that I could not find a decent poll that was integrated into WordPress, which is what we're running the Soundbites website on. There wasn't a good one integrated, so I decided no more integration, and the heck with it, I just wrote one. And it sort of mostly, I think, works now. Of course, I thought 10:30 at night, who's looking at the site at 10:30 at night? Well,
Some people.
I found out it was Racer Bob and Hot Dog looking at the site at 10:30 at night and not able to use the pole. That's right. It wasn't right yet, but it is. It theoretically is now. We have the poll up, but it's a real simple one. What's your favorite browser so far? We've got 40 votes. Firefox is in the lead with 23. Chrome is next with 14. Opera has one. Other has two. We've got people from New Orleans, Foxborough, Batavia, Fairport, all over the place, West Seneca. So, thank you all. Please vote in the poll. I want to give it a thorough little workout. And it's a pretty easy one. Just pick a browser. That's simple enough. Your favorite browser. You may have two favorite browsers. That means you don't have a favorite browser. So just pick one. That'll be good. Please vote in the poll and we'll have some fun. People are voting away. Brave got a vote. Very nice. Opera got one vote. Interestingly, who was it? It was Hot Dog, I think, who voted for Brave. And then he was able to go in and vote again. And I think that's because Opera. And I think that's because Opera has a VPN. And so each time you go in, you might get a different address.
Yeah.
So it's based on the IP address. I tried to make it so that you can only vote once per IP address. I used Tor browser and voted from Vienna, Austria.
You're skewing the demographic.
Skewing the demographic right off the chart. But also please, those of you on the listening to the podcast, particularly from overseas, please also vote when you get a chance. I'd like to see how accurate this thing is. And we'll go from there. But we do have the poll sort of back up. It's not integrated into the website because I don't do WordPress integration. But it is on the site, and it does. Like I said, I got salty last night and just wrote one, and the heck with it. I don't care anymore. Because I couldn't find one I liked. So I wrote one I don't particularly like, but I wrote it. Get over it. So we have that up, and people are voting, and I want to thank all those who are voting. We've got 55 votes so far, so that's pretty cool. I'll fix it. I know there's not a total and things like that. I'll get that all fixed. But until then, please vote in the poll. And if you're using Internet Explorer, for Pete's sake, stop. Stop using Internet Explorer. Just don't use it. It is the most vulnerable browser out there in every level, as you can tell from the news item. Every version of Internet Explorer is broken badly. There's a fix out, but as we know, Microsoft's fixes are not always permanent or useful. Stop using Internet Explorer. I know you can't get away. If you're using Windows 10, it's built into the operating system. It's built into the NT kernel that you're still using. Yes, way back from Windows NT, it's still the same kernel. You're using that internally, if nowhere else. So do the update, which theoretically will fix at least this little problem. And you can use Chrome or Chromium, which is basically the same choice here on the list. Firefox is excellent. Dolphin is good, particularly on a mobile machine. Opera is excellent. Brave is very secure. Nobody from Safari. Where are all the Mac people? Oh, one Safari person. There we go. Luckily, nobody using Internet Explorer and nobody's using Edge, so I'm impressed by that. Did you vote for Safari?
I haven't got there yet.
Okay. You may not be able to because I voted on...
Yeah, I can't yet. One thing that Microsoft is doing with Edge is the next version of Edge, which is now in public beta for both Mac and Windows, is they're basing Edge now on the Chromium engine.
Right.
Which it will now work more like Chrome, so websites won't have to make 17 different versions of their website.
And believe me, we web developers are thrilled.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you can. Okay. Safari.
Are you on Wi-Fi or Ether?
I'm on Wi-Fi, but I think I'm on a different Wi-Fi than you are.
Yeah.
Oh, and you have little spaces in between yours. Oh, that's interesting. Is that only when you're on a particular
okay, that's,
size?
Okay, that's the actual size.
Ah, there you go. Okay.
And if I zoom
so,
in.
Yeah, right. When you're zoomed in, it's going to be a little different. So, yeah, I put that up, and it seems to be working fairly well. You can't vote again, I think. Oh, I left the I saw some test stuff there. Okay. Yeah, good. You're done. I'll put the total in there later this afternoon so people can see how many people actually voted. I can tell you that right now at least it's 63 from 14 different locations.
Neat.
So yeah, it's a very cool little poll. I'm very pleased at how well it works for having done it in an hour at 10:30 last night. So
makes you mad you waited that long then too, doesn't it?
It really does. I mean,
it was only an hour of work.
I really wanted to do it right. I wanted it to be integrated into the system. I wanted it to you know, be right there on the page and people would be able to take it and it would be fine and it would be easy and you'd see the results and blah, blah, blah. Only none of them work well in this context. I mean, there are a lot of contexts they would work great in. They did not work well in this context. So now I just wrote one and the heck with it. It is what it is. And you can take the poll and be part of the deal. And I'll be now putting a poll up every week. So you'll have all week, particularly those of you who are on the podcast, please vote in the poll so that I can see that it's working. I'd like to get, we've got 63 people. I'd like to get well over 100 by the time we're done. That would be great. We're up to 70, so we're close. We're close. So, the poll archives won't work. I'll add, once we have more than one poll, I'll add a choice to look at those to the thing as well. I just wanted to get the poll up last night. I didn't play around as much with that as I could have. And the last couple polls were all one voter, I think, or one or two votes, and that was it. Because it was broken. It's broken. So, yeah, it's not integrated into the site exactly, and that kind of disappoints me. But I don't do WordPress integration. So there we are.
There's a WordPress meetup group in Rochester I keep meaning to go to because Cider uses WordPress.
Right,
too. Well,
right,
I use
right.
WordPress for Cider.
Right. Well, it's I prefer to write my own websites generally, but for what we're doing with Soundbites, WordPress makes a lot of sense. So that's fine. I didn't have a problem with that. And it's a decent looking site. I wanted it to be fairly simple because I want it to work well on phones and I wanted it to work well on for the visually impaired and et cetera, et cetera. Although Google is angry with me because, again, it's WordPress. It doesn't work as well for the visually impaired as it could.
Oh, well,
nothing much I can do about that.
And how much are they paying you?
Well, right, but it's in many ways a labor of love, and
yeah, no, but
I can do it. But I, you know, considering it took me like an hour and a half last night to code this, I'm not displeased with it entirely. The toughest part was getting the "you can only vote once" part working. People were either able to vote constantly or not vote at all.
Oops!
Took me a while to
figure that out.
Clean up the issue with that. And I think it's working now. So, let me know in the forum. Right now, it's under "How do you take the new poll?" Or it could be under IE Security Emergency Update. Since I started the IE Security Update thing, and then I think it was Racer Bob or maybe it was Hot Dog started the "How do you take the new poll?" because he or she couldn't take the new poll. It was Racer Bob. And so you can post in either one of them is how that works. And I'll clean that up when I get home. now that we see that it's kind of working and people are actually taking the poll. I'm very excited. People have been complaining to me about the poll for a very long time. So if everybody who didn't take, who's been complaining about the poll, takes the poll, we'll get a fairly decent sampling to see what's going on. So, yeah, people are taking the poll. I love to see that.
Cool.
I love to see that. 79 people so far from 20 different locations.
Yeah, but you can't be as happy as I am.
No, you're happier. Yeah. I your texts last night.
Oh.
Dave texted me yesterday, and I could tell through the text messaging system, he was as giddy as a 13-year-old girl going to a pop concert of some sort.
Whatever. Yeah, that was Taylor such a Swift. Surprise to finally click on my neighborhood to see, you know, because I've been tracking right along. Steve and I have both been tracking, you know, as far as...
he's talking about green light, which he has not mentioned yet.
Right, getting our green light. And, you know, we've been hanging at a low percentage. And then all of a sudden I looked yesterday and it says, oh, we'll be sending you an email and schedule a time because we're running the fiber through your neighborhood and setting you up. I had to sit there and stare at it to make sure what I was reading was correct.
And I want to know how you jumped ahead of me, because I'm still at 96%. You jumped from 70 to construction.
78% up to...
I think he bribed somebody, pretty sure.
Well, I think, no, what I think did it for us is because of all the businesses that are along there. I mean, we got a school, you've got a plaza, you've got... like I say, a whole bunch of businesses along from Culver Road right down to 590 on that north side of the street. There's a couple dentist office, a beauty salon, there's a daycare center, and like I say, that little plaza, and then a bar and everything else. So,
and they're offering 2 gigabyte now.
Yeah, there's a 2 gigabit.
Gigabit, yeah.
Yeah, 2 gigabit download, 200 megabits upload. Is their newest speed 2 gig? Now you're thinking 2 gig.
No.
I can do 2 gig. You're right. Thinking it. You're not going to go for it, but you're thinking it. You know you're thinking it.
Oh, yeah. And faster, it's always better. But the thing that is, to go from right now, I'm averaging about 82 to jump up to 500.
Yes. That is their minimum, 500 megabits.
Yeah.
Up and 500 megabits down, 50 up.
I'll suffer with that.
Yeah, yeah. You can. Yeah, it's nice of you. It's nice of you to do
I
that.
I can always upgrade. Yeah. I can always turn the meter up.
Oh, you're exactly right. You can do that easily and quickly. The thing that got me is the first time I downloaded something big, I downloaded an Ubuntu distribution.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing came down like that.
You thought something was broken.
And I thought something was broken. I'm swearing and screaming, and suddenly, and then I looked at the size of the file.
10 gigs.
And it was the whole thing.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, yeah.
Well, we used to joke in the early days, no matter how fast your modem was, it took an hour to download what you wanted.
Right.
So, you know, in the beginning, a 10 meg file took an hour, and then a 100 meg file took an hour, and then a gig file took an hour. Now,
mm-hmm.
Now
how do you tax it? What's the largest file you download? A couple 3 gig.
I uploaded 15,000 files to Google Photos.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose I could download them all again and see how
fast they come down. Yeah,
and I have, like I've said before, I have an online repository of all my stuff. I suppose I could just download all of that, see how long it takes.
All your photos.
All my photos, all my documents, all everything I have,
yeah,
is backed up in two separate places on the net. I'm using a thing called PCloud, PCloud. It was, I want to say $175 for a lifetime 500 gigs. So yeah, well yeah,
that's dirt cheap.
So at that point, I thought I can't say no.
Heck no.
And it may still be in effect. I told you about this when I got it. PCloud.
I remember you talking about it a while back. That's been a while.
.com, maybe? No, maybe not. Maybe not. Hold on. This may be someplace you don't want to go. Oh, yeah. No. Okay. You don't want to go there. PCloud.com. Net, maybe? Well, what the flying heck on a stick?
Maybe it's gone already.
No, I'm still using it. I just checked it this morning. Yeah, pcloud.com.
Secure Swiss cloud storage.
Secure Swiss is in Switzerland?
Oh, that's what the Google summary says.
Mine just says secure cloud storage. I don't know. Maybe you're in someplace different. I don't know. But the pricing was, like I said, it was $175 for an individual. Yeah, it's still there. 500 gigs, $175 for a lifetime, a one-time payment. So I thought, yeah, okay, I can do that. And it's automated. It works very much like Time Machine and all of those other things, where, as I said, this is my documents folder.
Mm-hmm.
So anything I put in the documents folder is automatically instantly backed up. Now, it doesn't do versioning. So if I delete something, it's deleted. If I update something, the old one goes away.
Mm-hmm.
So it's strictly backup. But for that little money,
yeah,
how do you say no? And, you know, if you want it for a preview on it, the family one is still cheap, up to 5 users. I mean, it's ridiculously inexpensive. So it's a pretty good deal. And if you're at all interested in backing up your old stuff, which here's a hint, you should be.
Mm-hmm.
You might want to take a look at what pCloud has to offer. I've been very impressed so far. We'll see. But so far, I've been impressed. And how we doing on the? Why is there a header? Thank you. So far, we're doing well on the poll. It seems to be working, so I'm pretty pleased. We've got people from Florida and Albuquerque. Hello, Albuquerque. Charlotte.
Did you take a left?
You did. Take a left at Albuquerque. Clarksburg, Eugene, Oregon. Jeez and crackers, nice. And the exotic Buffalo, New York is here. So we're doing pretty well. So thank you. I want to give it a test and see how it works. But to get back to the thing we were talking about for just a minute at the top of the show, if you're still using Internet Explorer, stop. If you haven't updated, this is a serious out-of-band security update. If Microsoft actually went to the trouble of putting out an update not on Patch Tuesday, you know it's a really serious problem. It is being actively exploited in the wild, so you really, really, really want to do this update because you can be hit at any website. All they have to do is craft an ad, get it into any one of 200 ad networks, and you're on your way. All right. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, with the new poll, and with you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. And we will be back with a whole lot more sound bites right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1 live and streaming.
Computer talk you can understand. More sound bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 36 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites, and we have Carl from Pottstown, PA on the line. Hiya, Carl. What's up?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Peachy, how are you?
Okay, I have a question about internet access. Presently, I'm accessing the internet through Comcast. They have a router which has a little jack in the side of it, and I'm able to plug any standard telephone into that jack so I can get telephone service through Comcast in addition to getting internet service. Now, Comcast is pretty expensive, so I've been thinking of dropping them, and I've been looking into several different companies that provide 4G LTE routers that connect to the cell phone network and provide either a wireless hotspot or a wired network connection you could plug into your computer to access the internet through the 4G LTE network.
Right.
And that's less expensive than Comcast. The problem is these little 4G LTE routers don't seem to have a jack in the side of them for a standard telephone. So my question is, how could I keep my telephone service if I switch over to one of these devices?
You don't. Yeah, you use the new service you get from the new device. But the biggest problem with cellular routers is that the cell plans always have a data cap. Now, do you have a data cap with your Comcast now?
Not now, no.
Yeah, so that most of the land-based internet services do not have a data cap. Cell mm-hmm. services always do, and it usually starts at like 10 gigs, which is two movies. And so
a month,
yeah. So using cellular internet for home is almost never a good idea.
It's not a bad idea. It's just an expensive idea.
Right. It's a very expensive idea if you don't have any alternative.
Right. So the
little router box you buy is relatively inexpensive, but then the cellular service plan you have to buy is relatively expensive.
Right. So look into the plans themselves.
Yeah, I definitely will. And just in case I decide to go that route, I'm still not quite clear on if it's possible to keep my home phone service, just a standard desktop, old-fashioned telephone.
Yes
or if
and
it's
no.
Not possible
you would have to subscribe to Comcast telephone separately from the cellular internet.
You might be able to move your number to something like Magic Jack or one of those
voice over IP services.
There are VoIP services, VOIP, voice over IP, which means you get your phone service over the internet, so it would come through your cell service now or in the future.
And what we're seeing, though, is a lot of people aren't using landlines at all. They're only using their cell phone.
Right.
And if you can transfer your land phone number to a new cell service if you want to go that way, too.
Okay.
But if you want, you go back to the olden days where you'd have one company giving you your telephone service and then a different company giving you your internet service.
Mm-hmm. Well, that brings something to mind, another question just very quickly. Just curious, do telephone companies, whether they're AT&T or whomever, Verizon, whatever, do they still provide old-fashioned analog telephone lines, or is that completely gone at this point?
Yeah, POTS lines, POTS, plain old telephone service.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it depends on your area, but many of them still do because that's honestly what they've done for 120 years and they don't know any different.
Okay.
So you should call your local company as to whether or not they still do. Many of them still provide the plain old copper lines. You could even buy DSL service over that if you really want to be slow and expensive. But
yeah.
they still at this point at least are still most companies. I don't know about Pottstown, but most companies are still selling POTS lines.
Okay. Well, thanks for your advice. I appreciate it.
Yep.
The one advantage of the POTS telephones is that they're powered by the phone system. So
right.
When your house power goes out, the telephone would still work. The same holds true now for cell service until your cell phone battery dies. In our house, I have one phone that's still hardwired, and then the rest of the house has portable phones on battery. But that one hardwired phone still. But I'm plugged into my internet company's VoIP line, so if the house phone dies or the power dies, I lose everything anyway.
Right. A lot of people put an uninterruptible power supply.
Yep, on your routers.
On their routers.
Yeah.
Mm. Okay, well, thanks a lot, guys.
All right, Carl, don't forget to vote in the poll when you get a chance.
I will.
All right, thanks.
Bye-bye.
We've also seen that many alarm companies want either a POTS line, and that's how the alarm reports, or they put in a cell phone for the alarm. When our store got robbed a few years ago, they pulled the RG&E meter off the wall and interrupted power to the building to turn the alarms off, so they couldn't call the alarm company. But our alarm company has a trigger that when power fails, they get a notice that they can't talk to the alarm system anymore. But then they recommended, you know, if you're really worried, you can put a cell phone in for your alarm, and then you pay for that cell phone service.
Right, that's a separate service. But it's not a bad one. I mean, the idea...
Hold on one second. If Pat... Oh, there she is. Never mind.
Okay. If you're... I've lost my train of thought. It was quickly derailed. It was clearly not hauling much at the time.
Cell phone alarm.
And alarms and et cetera. So, yeah, if you're looking to put in a cell an alarm system, you do have to pay attention carefully to how it talks to the alarm company. And that is much different today than back in the day when they just say, oh, we'll just hook it to your phone line.
Yeah, no.
I like those commercials that are running now that we're a security monitoring company. We don't actually do anything, but we monitor.
Right, right, right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Pat from Webster, New York. Hi, Pat. What's up?
How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. I have a Google issue.
Uh-oh.
And I've just set the table. First of all, my husband has a PC, and I have a Chromebook. And because we don't have a lot of devices, we both use the same account.
Right.
And it's never been a problem until about a month ago. And so what's happening is on my husband's Google page, when he opens it, it says it's paused. And then when he signs out, it says syncing is paused.
P-A-R-S?
S-Y-N-C-A-N-G, syncing.
Right.
You sync something?
Right.
It's paused. P-A-U-S-E-D.
Oh.
What are you syncing and to where?
Well, see, that's it. We both use the same account. On my Chromebook, it doesn't say anything about syncing for me.
Well, okay, what do you use Google for then? Let's back up a step.
Well, let's start with...
Google has our Gmail account.
Correct. That doesn't do syncing.
Right.
Syncing is for syncing files to your computer through Google Drive.
Okay. With that said, seeing that my husband's never used to say pause when he goes up to his K for his screen, you know, up there in the right-hand corner for his identification, it says pause by his name. And then when he signs out, it says syncing is paused.
Right, because it can't sync if you're signed out of your account.
Right. But would that affect my Chromebook?
No. Only if you're syncing files to your Chromebook.
No, that isn't taking place. But so then the second part that's happening. So is that normal that's like that? It never used to be.
Yeah, what it's saying is that it cannot sync because you've signed out, which is correct.
It's and it sounds like you might have turned on syncing accidentally.
So you can, is it better to have it on or off, or is that a matter of preference?
It's a matter of preference. If you want to sync the files on your computer to the Google Cloud, then you can see those files on another computer.
Okay. So I'll have them check that and turn that off. But with another issue is when I sign into Gmail, and it never used to be a problem, and like you said, we both use the same account, I don't have a sign-out screen.
It should be under your little face icon.
And it's just doesn't have sign-out on the little right of it anymore.
But you're signed in okay.
Well, that's another thing. I just clicked the mail icon, and it takes me right there. I used to be able to have to put a password in. So somehow that's changed.
Well, it's still signed in until you sign out. And if you click on your little face icon in the upper corner, there should be a sign-out button.
There isn't. That's gone. So in searching around on the Internet, which I didn't want to start changing things willy-nilly because I don't really know what I'm doing, there was a link that says you go into incognito off the choices for the account when you get into the Google, and you put mail.google.com in the incognito window.
Well, incognito just means it won't remember that you're already logged in, and then you have to log in yourself.
Right, but when I put my password and my email in there, it gives when I want to get out of Gmail, the window does come up with the sign out. And then it says you are signed out.
Right.
Until I click out of the page, and then the sign out where it says you are signed out goes away. And see, it always used to work just fine. It's only been the last month or so that it's been a mess.
Yeah, Google made some changes. But here's the thing. If you sign out and you see the thing that says you are signed out, if you leave that page, that little box will go away because it's part of that page. You're still signed out.
Okay, but why do you think my window that used to give me the option right off of signing out of Gmail, I would just go up there and sign out? That's missing.
Yeah, that changed.
They don't want you to sign out.
Yeah, they don't really want you to sign out anymore.
That's weird because I still have it on mine.
Yeah, I don't.
But I'm not in Chrome.
Well, my husband has it on his PC, but my Chromebook doesn't show that anymore.
Yeah, now your husband is not using Chrome, is he?
Yes.
He is?
He's got Chrome on his PC. He's using Windows 7.
Yeah, but when he signs into Gmail, he signs in through Chrome or he signs in through Edge?
Through Chrome.
Oh, interesting. Because Steve still got it on his, and I don't. So you generally don't see it on Chrome, but you do see it on other browsers.
Mm-hmm. And see, both of ours, the PC and the Chromebook, used to fly with no problem. And there's some change, and we didn't make any changes.
No, Google is always updating Chrome.
Right.
And one of the updates changed that logout.
Maybe it's desktop versus tablet, because Chrome on my computer is giving me the sign out command.
Yeah, my Chromebook is not.
Let me try my iPad.
Right.
That's the issue, and it always used to be okay.
Well, the issue here is that a Chromebook uses the... How do I put this? A Chromebook uses the... your Google ID to sign into everything when you log in. So when you turn it off, it essentially logs you out.
Okay. Yeah, when you're not using it, right. My Gmail is okay, but it's when I'm on, Gmail is really open all the time, correct?
No, it isn't necessarily open. You don't have to open it.
But since you're logged into your Chromebook, when you open a Gmail window, it automatically logs you into Gmail.
Right.
Right. Now, I've closed my Gmail window, and I get essentially logged out of that. Your husband should have no trouble logging in while you're logged in.
Yeah, it's, he doesn't.
Right. So it's not a worry. It's just a new way of them. It's just a new thing that they've put up there. Basically, because you don't have to log in, they don't even bother with log out anymore.
Oh, is that because of an update then?
That's because of an update. It's nothing you did, and it's nothing you need to change.
So you don't see any problem with that then?
No, I don't. No, absolutely not.
Okay. And what about the, like I said, the link I researched and came across about putting in mail.google.com and in the incognito window?
Well,
and then when I go there and I want to get out of Gmail, it has the sign out.
Right, and that's because what's happened there is in incognito mode, Google doesn't know who you are. So you have to log in and log out as if you were not on a Chromebook.
Okay, so
but it essentially,
bottom line is it's from an update, and it's no big issue, but it's...
Yeah, different. It's absolutely not an issue at all.
We seem like it's an issue.
Yeah, well, you notice it, and so it seems like an issue, but it's not an issue.
Okay.
Okay.
One second, please.
Yeah. I don't know what could happen there. Why we're waiting?
Her husband's giving her another
fact,
question.
That, when I did research and not to bore you with it, a lot of people were saying, "Google, why are you going to change things? Leave it alone."
Well, I don't disagree with that. Yes,
and like you said to start with, bring back the old days. You know.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay. Just one more thing. Back to the syncing is paused. It's just a matter of choice. It doesn't affect anything. Either way.
What you're doing is using a little bit of your Google Docs storage.
Okay. Well, very good. I feel better. I tried to call, I don't know, a week ago, I guess it was.
Party time.
Yeah, party time when you folks were celebrating your 30 years.
Oh, yeah.
I don't have all day. But I got this off my mind because, you know, you, well, any change bothers people, you know?
No, I get it. Absolutely get it. And I completely agree with you.
Okay. Very good. Well, I appreciate your time.
Thank you. Have
Thank
fun.
You. Bye bye.
Bye bye. Yeah, it's. I agree. Oops.
We used to get calls like that all the time back when Yahoo was really popular. People would call us up and say, I don't like the new Yahoo, make them change it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or, you know, change it back.
Change is hard. And people don't like it and it bothers them and you know, that's why people are still on XP.
Yep.
They know it's not good for them and it doesn't matter. They're going to stick with it. But yeah, so don't worry about it. It's not an issue in the least. And yes, everybody makes little changes here and there to their systems. I get that. I do. Everybody hates it. I really get that. I really do. But it is what it is. And there's not much we can do about that other than just live with it, I guess, I suppose.
It's part of life.
Yeah. Not much else we can say. The big thing is what people like Google are doing, and all companies do this, is they're trying to make the experience better for the average user. Now, the problem is that that sometimes means change. And as we just said, change is bad for so many people. But the reality is that there's just making those changes is often a good thing in terms of how well the system works in general for everybody. I mean, the idea that you don't have to log in and out means that you get into your mail like that.
Most people don't want to log in.
Right. They just want, when I click that Gmail icon at the bottom of my Chromebook screen, I just want to get into Gmail. I don't want to have to sign in again and remember my password again. Is it still signed in from this one? Am I still signed in over here? Am I getting my mail in the right place? Blah, blah, blah. No, just click on it and you're in and you're done and it's easy. So there's a lot of that that companies like Google, you know, Google gets a million emails probably an hour about why did you change this or why don't you change that? And they take all of that into consideration. But, you know, even so, it's an issue all the way around. And so people have to be aware that not every change is going to be one that you personally prefer.
And there is no phone number you can call to complain at Google or ask Google questions.
Right.
We have people all the time that bring their computer in because now it's infected because they Googled how to call Google and called the phone number that came up.
Yeah, don't do that. It's not a real phone number. Google does not give out real phone numbers.
They do everything through email.
Right. Neither does Microsoft. None of them do. So if you have a problem, do not Google.
Oh, there is a Google phone number for Google AdWords. So if you want to buy an ad on Google, then you can call the phone number.
If you want to spend money, Google will take
They'll gladly take your
that's
money
right,
for that.
That's right.
But otherwise, don't bother calling them.
That's it. That's how it works.
And for the most part, unless you placed an ad, they're not going to call you either, folks.
That's the truth.
Yeah, even the good guys can't call you anymore because we're so jaded by so many spam bad guy calls that we just ignore the phone, period.
Right. Imagine if you were to call somebody and say, hi, this is Steve Ray from Soundbites. I personally would hang up.
No. Click.
Just in case
even if
really
you knew
was
it was
you.
Me. Yeah.
Exactly.
But, see it on the ID.
Yeah.
And
right.
Just think of your company, how many customers you have, and how much it would cost to hire people to call all of your customers every day to see if they have any problems.
And then multiply that by a gazillion for companies like Microsoft and Google.
And not do their job of working on the current machines that are already in the shop that you need to get fixed. And people are calling that wondering, when's my machine going to be ready?
Right, Google.
Well, I could be working on it, but I had to answer the stupid phone.
Yeah. Oh, I had folks that would do that all the time. Well, when's it going to be ready? I just brought it in yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You just brought it in yesterday.
Yeah, right.
You're in line to get a... Well, any idea? Well, if I wasn't talking on the phone to answer all these folks' questions, when it's going to be ready, I could be working on it and getting it ready.
Yep.
I like the ones that tell you it's no rush, and then they call an hour later. I thought you said it wasn't a rush.
You're right.
Or the opposite of that, they say it is a rush. You get it finished, and then they take a week to pick it up.
Yeah. Right. Oh, yeah.
If it's a rush, charge them extra.
Yep.
Oh,
they don't want to pay that.
It's not a rush.
Yeah.
It's that simple. I'm sorry, but...
Yeah, we had a fee that was for rush service. You want to pay that? Then they'd rethink it. Yeah, no, that's okay. When do you think it'll be ready?
Yeah, right.
And give me 3 or 4 days.
Right.
Okay.
Oh, laddie, you didn't tell them how long it would really take, did you? Yeah.
A guesstimate.
Yeah.
Quite often, you know, depending on how many we had in the shop and that, and, you know, Dan and I and Wally and then even Samantha was working on machines, and sometimes we'd get them knocked out really quick.
Yeah.
Other times, depending on the issues, it could take a while.
Because that's the other part of the problem. You know, you see it when you take your car in. I just have there's a little knock somewhere. And then they call you up and they say, well, your oil pan is leaking and, you know, blah, blah, blah. So it's going to take longer. Well, the same thing is true of computers. Often the tiny little problem you think you're having is a gigantic virus infestation that's going to take 40 hours of just the system cranking to fix it.
But then they get confused about you pay an hourly rate. Does that mean I'm going to have to pay 40 times your hourly rate?
Right.
Well, there's billable time, and then there's time sitting on the bench when it's working.
Right, and you generally don't pay for bench time, but you pay for billable time.
Yeah.
So finding that this was your issue, getting the solution ready and starting it, you pay for. The 40 hours it just cranks away fixing it, you don't pay for.
No.
But then making sure that fix worked, cleaning everything up, fixing, you know, getting your machine back together, that you pay for. So there's a front end and a back end you pay for, and the middle you don't.
What used to get me is folks would bring it in, and you'd have them, you know, well, it's got this and this. My friend said it should only take you about an hour.
Yeah.
And I go, well, then you want your friend to fix it? Well, why? How long do you think it's going to take? I don't know. I says, but you're not paying for the time. You're paying for my knowledge.
That's right.
My years of experience. Yes, I might be able to do it in an hour or so, but you're going to pay the going shop rate, you know, or even if it only takes a half hour, we might still charge you an hour because you're paying for our knowledge.
Right.
Especially with something where there's vague systems. My computer seems slow. That's kind of vague. It's going to take a while to figure out what it is. If it's, you know, my email doesn't work because it wants my password, that's probably a quick fix.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, that music tells me you wasted an hour of your life on this nonsense. Don't go away. We're going to do it all over again. Take a quick bio break. I know I will. And we'll be back in just a few more minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. Hey, this would be an excellent time to check out the new poll and actually make a choice there. And we'll be right back. If you haven't called us yet, I don't know why not, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. You are listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites right here on the Truly Great, and truly grateful to you that we can continue to be member supported. Jazz 90.1 on the air and on Twitter. We'll see you in just a few minutes.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
On Twitter at 901Jazz.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
This is Steve Ray.
And is it?
Oh,
it is.
Wow.
It's 6 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites.
Still didn't change.
Hasn't changed yet. Really, me. I know. I'm sitting next to him. And our next caller is Tom from Penfield, New York. Hiya, Tom. What's up?
How are you doing today?
Peachy. How are you?
Oh, pretty good. So I've got a Chromebook, and so I have no problems with that. I've had it about 3 years.
But there
I got
you go.
I'm leaving for about 10 weeks to go on a trip in the cold weather. And I'd like to have something to monitor temperature with in the house that I can check up on my phone. And I've started to look at things, but I get down a rabbit hole. Like, there's all kinds of choices for these kind of devices. I just need something in case it drops below 55 degrees in the house so I
right.
can call my son and tell him to go over and check on it.
Well, you could go all the way to a remote thermostat, like a Nest or one of the other thermostats. That way, if the yeah. temperature gets low, you can raise it yourself.
Yeah. I was looking for a simpler solution, I guess.
Well, is your only computer a Chromebook?
I've got a Chromebook, and my wife has got a MacBook Pro.
Okay. Weather stations are not entirely my thing, but I know that you can buy fairly inexpensive weather stations or just a thermometer or thermostat, I guess.
Yes, here's one for 50, mm-hmm. 50 bucks. That's a thermometer and a hygrometer.
And you put that in your house and you can check it from your phone?
Yep. iPhone or Android.
There you go.
I saw some of those, but they're like a Bluetooth device. So you've got to be close enough to actually check on them. It's going to be remote. I'm halfway across the country, so I want to be able to check in.
Yeah,
and see if there's a problem, you know.
Yeah, the one I found is Wi-Fi, so it joins your Wi-Fi network.
Okay.
Yeah, I just Googled remote. What did I Google? Remote temperature sensor. Or Wi-Fi thermometer. Okay. Would probably find one. So apparently I've been doing a lot of Amazon searches lately because all the results are coming back from Amazon.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I'm sure Amazon is paying for that, too.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I looked around for a while myself, and my problem was I found so many choices, and every choice I found either was so simple, it was only like a Bluetooth connection, or it got more complicated, and it was like in the $200 or $300 range. So I'm looking for something around $50 that I can just use for monitoring temperature in the house.
Yeah, I just Googled remote thermometer.
Yeah.
And I found an Accurite wireless for $25, and there's a company called Ambient Weather that sells entire solutions.
There's a number of matter of fact.
Believe
it or not,
even Wi-Fi thermometer.
Same thing. Yeah.
You can go over to like check out at Home Depot, believe it or not, and they've got some thermometers there or thermostats that through your phone. They've got the app that you can check, and it'll register your temperature, the house, and you can control it remotely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I don't necessarily want to do that. I just want to check to see if it goes below, like, 55 degrees. I was actually thinking of putting, a camera on top of a stepladder and facing it towards the current thermostat.
Sure.
That
would certainly work. You could also
very simple, and I thought it might be something that you heard about.
But like you were saying, instead of having to not check it in a timely manner, where some of these systems and they're really not that expensive, that you could it'll even warn you, it'll send you an email that hey, if it gets down to this temperature, send me an email.
Yeah.
Sort of like the old back in the days for the U.S. Uninterrupted power supplies. You could have them set up on a network that if your power was going down on your network, it would send you an email.
Mm-hmm.
Same type of technology.
Signed up a few weeks ago for alerts from RG&E if the power goes out in my area.
Right.
So I will get that. I'll get that through an email or something or a text. But
right.
Okay, well, I'll shop around some more.
Hold on a second.
Hold on a second.
We're putting up a link to a site called Weather Station Advisor. They have an article about the best Wi-Fi thermometer and wireless remote temperature monitor for 2019.
Wow.
So
okay, thank you very much. You guys have done it again.
Thank you. In a couple of minutes, that'll be up there. Okay. And you can go to our website at soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. And you can see that there and also vote in the poll.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Have a nice day.
You too. Yeah, I actually was thinking about doing something like that with my Raspberry Pi. Because you can add all kinds of sensors to that thing.
If you just have a sensor, then you got to call someone to go do it, find out what the problem is. But if you actually get a thermostat, you can raise the temperature up yourself.
Right. And I have a friend who's got, I think it's a Nest. And he did take a trip. I have to admit, I'm a little jealous. He rented a car and drove all of Route 66.
Oh, neat.
Unbelievable. Well, how cool is that? Anyway, the point is, he has a Nest, and he has the Nest software on his phone, so he was able to monitor his house the entire time he was gone.
It's not that expensive. Depending on, like anything else, you can add quite a bit or you could do just the basic things that you want to do. But there are devices out there that you could do that type of stuff and control. But going back to the Raspberry Pis, that's the whole nice thing about the Raspberry Pi. They are coming out with what they call, for folks that don't know, when you buy just a basic Raspberry Pi, it's literally just a little board and you can get what they call hats. And hats are different boards that you literally plug in. They just slide in on top and snap in. And
there's
you
a
can
set of pins, and you just attach them to the
slide
pins.
Yeah, pins are on in, and then they can do multitude of different functions depending upon the type of hat that you bought for it to do.
Right.
I've been looking on and off for an anemometer that we can put at the flying field.
Sure.
To tell me what the wind speed is before I drive all the way out there. Problem is, there's no internet there because it's a field.
Right.
So then you got to add a cellular system to it, and now you're talking money.
Yeah, now you're talking a lot of money.
A remote anemometer is cheap. The internet connection is the expensive bit.
Right. I have a story about Amazon's latest announcements. As per our good friend Dennis Worcester, we'll be calling the Amazon assistant Alaska so as not to trigger them every time we actually say the word.
What's the word?
I'm not going to say it.
I like Alyosha.
Alyosha, I like that.
Andy Nako. God, sorry, Andy. Forgot your name.
Amazon inundated us with a whole new lineup of hardware devices on Wednesday. Amazon has given its entry-level Echo, the Echo Dot, a nifty upgrade. The new Echo Dot with clock now features a digital alarm clock on the front, which can be dimmed if you prefer at times. This LED display also allows the Dot to show the weather when asked or a countdown timer. And I believe by the weather, they just mean the temperature. I have one of those for Google, the Google Home. As a there's a company actually that put out one that had time and temperature on the front. It's very cool. The new Echo Studio is Amazon's response to Google's Nest Max and Apple's HomePod. The device supports 3D audio and Dolby Atmos. Surprise! Alaska comes to your ear through Amazon's own $130 wireless earbuds. The Echo Buds include Bose's active noise reduction technology and provides hand-free access to Alaska so you can do things like play music, get directions, order an Uber, and more. The Echo Buds offer 5 hours of music or 4 hours of call time and come with a case that holds up to 3 charges. And with a tap... beg your pardon... Apparently, I'm allergic to the Alaska. And with a tap, the Echo Buds can access your phone's other assistants like Siri or Google. The Echo Show 8 is a smaller 8-inch version of the 10-inch flagship model of the Echo device with a screen. It's a little bigger than the Echo 5, which is more of an alarm clock alternative. So it makes sense for watching videos, placing video calls, or dropping in on the kids. The device features an HD display and built-in camera shutter. Amazon refreshed its existing Echo speaker with better sound and new colorful fabric covers, but remains the same price as before. Other than that, it's the same old, so I don't think it's worth upgrading to, but if you're about to buy one, you'll get a little more out of it. Amazon introduces beta invite-only hardware devices. One is a pair of Alaska-enabled glasses. Remember how much people laughed at Google Goggles or Google Glass or whatever they called it? Well, everybody's doing it now. It sticks four micro speakers in the frame for hands-free Alaska. The other is an Alaska-enabled smart ring with two microphones to put Alaska on your finger for quick questions or brief calls. Amazon launched the next generation of its Eero router, which now works better with Alaska. The router lets you do things like shut off or pause the Wi-Fi with voice commands. That's kind of interesting. Alaska, turn off Wi-Fi till the kids do their homework.
Whoa.
Yep.
Yeah. That router is $100 and available in a 3-pack for $250. What's an Amazon event without a new Alaska-powered oven? Right? This time around, Amazon takes on the June oven with a combination convection oven, microwave, air fryer, and food warmer. It's a dessert topping. It's a floor wax.
It's both.
And who doesn't, all in one.
And who doesn't want Alaska to sound like Samuel L. Jackson? No, really. The Jackson voice will be a 99-cent add-on to Echo devices, and more celebrity additions are in the works. Now, from what I understood, though, it's 99 cents to say, hey, Alaska, ask Samuel Jackson, blah, blah, blah. It isn't actually replacing Alaska's voice with Samuel Jackson's voice. So I think it's a limited number of things it can do. But again, it's only $1, so what the heck. So do any of these excite you? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. I have a couple of Alaska devices. The main reason I got them, because I was doing some work with a company that was doing some putting stuff on Alaska devices. So I got a couple of them. I have one. There's one in our kitchen. There's one up in the computer room. There's one in the kitchen, and my daughter has one. So I can call her right through the Alaska without having to. Pick up a phone, like that's so much better.
I was gonna say, because you could do the same thing with your Pixel phone.
Yes, I can. But yeah, so and it's interesting because every once in a while I'll ask either the Echo or the Google something, and then I don't particularly like the answer, so I ask the other one, see if I get a better response.
I'm wondering though, and I haven't tried this, if you can ask the phone to make a phone call and put it on speaker.
I've seen where they've had an Alaska and a Soho.
Siri
doesn't trigger as much.
No, if I if I got my phone and
I know what you're saying.
Well, now they have that. What is the remote assistant where you can say call the beauty salon and schedule me an appointment, and it does. With the clerks.
Right, but no, if I just wanted to have it make a phone call. Say, call my wife and put it on speakerphone.
Well, yes. Better, you can just ask your Google Home to make a phone call.
No, I'm saying the Pixel.
You can do it. No, but you can just say to Google Home, call this number. And it will call the number, and you can. It's like a speakerphone now because it's coming through the Google Home.
Yeah, but I don't have a Google Home. I'm just saying if I...
Oh, yeah. Well, you have Google Assistant on that as well.
Yeah, that's why I haven't tried it. That's why.
Yeah.
But that would be handy just to be able to say, that, trigger it, and have it put it on speakerphone for me if I'm driving or anything else.
Yeah. I have connected my phone to my Wi-Fi, my Bluetooth in my car.
Yeah, I've got that too. But any other time if I'm just sitting around or, the car's not running.
Right, right.
Or whatever. My van that I drive.
What I don't know is you can certainly ask it to make a call. What I don't know is if you can then say, hey, turn on the speaker.
Yeah.
That I don't know.
I'm going to have to check that out this week.
What I found on my iPhone is that by using the voice command to start the call, it automatically does it on speaker.
Oh, there you go.
Because it knows the phone's not up to your head.
Right.
Sweet.
I don't know. I've only ever made calls through the Bluetooth to my phone, to my car. So I don't know. Dave's going to try it at the next break, if not right now.
No, I gotta think about it. That would be sweet.
That would be pretty good.
Well, because my van doesn't have that, and it'd be handy. I've got a little thing that I can have the phone right there, and I can do hands-free. But, it's when I'm pulled over, I got to be able to just say that, not even have to take my hands off the wheels or anything else.
Yep, yep. No, I get it. That would be sweet. We'll try that during the break.
All right.
You can give me a call.
Okay.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Also, Google Home can make calls as well. If you've got a Google contact, for example, you can say call, you know, 585-123-4567. But you can also just say, you know, call Dave Enright. And if you're in my contacts,
yep, it'll do it.
It'll call you.
Well, that's the other thing, though, and I love with the Google phone, though, or the, I should say the Pixel phone, is being able to screen all these calls.
Huh.
Any call that I get in now, you know, if it's not in my list there, I just hit the screen button, and it automatically screens it for me. And it's usually click, and then it marks it as spam. And I go, yes, thank you.
Every once in a while, I will answer one. And the first thing I do is on my keypad, I hit 4,
mm-hmm.
which records the call.
Okay.
And it says this call is being recorded.
Oh.
Click.
And they hang up quick.
Ooh.
Yeah, yeah.
So you just hit the number 4?
Yeah, once you got to set it up. So you set it up in the phone settings that you can hit the number 4 to record a call. And it does say this call is being recorded.
Oh, that'd be even more fun.
Yeah, it is.
New York is only a one-party state, so you don't have to say that.
No, you don't.
But just in case.
They don't. Yeah. I don't think you get the choice.
Yeah.
Yeah, but still not.
But then that's another
just
trigger.
Just to tick them off. They're bugging me. Let me bug them right back.
You're out of circuits.
I wish you could change. Well, I use that one. That's on my answering machine called.
What's that?
Oh,
yeah.
The number that says this number is no longer in service.
Yeah.
And that starts my answering machine message. But I would like to be able to say, to change the message that says it's being recorded. I would like it to say, this call may be recorded for service quality assurance or whatever it is they normally say. So it doesn't just, it just kind of baldly says this call is being recorded.
Oh, yeah. It'd be nice to be 11.
You just need something that says that. It doesn't actually have to record.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Well, I wonder if it's in the system or if it's something built into the phone that it's a file. You'd have to find out if it's just a file.
Yeah, you have to be able if you can find it and change it.
Yeah, if you get buried in
or
there.
Or if it's coming from inside your phone or if it's coming from the Google system out there somewhere. But yeah, you can set up your phone to do that. It's in the settings for the phone. You can turn that on. It's in several
Android,
other things.
Android only. On the iPhone, it's third-party apps.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's built into my Pixel. I don't know if it's in every Android phone. I suspect it probably is. But it's built into my Pixel phone. And it's pretty handy. I get the call, you know, I'm retired, I can do what I want. So I get the call and I listen for a few minutes. And the minute they ask me, because don't forget, they often will start out with, can you hear me?
Mm-hmm.
And all they're looking for is a yes. So now I actually start the thing right away. The minute I pick up the phone and say hello, I hit that button. And almost immediately I get a click. Thank you. Bye-bye. And I doubt I'm going to get a call back from them, although I then immediately mark the call as spam. And there you are.
They're not going to bother.
Right.
No, once they, you know, they...
But that's a real nice feature of the Pixel phone. Again, it is a Google thing. I don't know if it's on every phone, but the ability you can, for most phones... Or if it's Android 10 or Android 9 or I don't know what version it is, but I can go into my phone in the settings and turn that on. And it turns on several other things as well. So all I have to do is then hit the 4. Excuse me. I'm drowning here. Oh, nice. All I have to do is hit the 4. On my keypad, and it does that. I don't. Yeah, it's not. I forget where it is, but it's somewhere in here.
I think from all the blogs I'm seeing, they're worried about the legality of it because many states is a two-party. where you, each person has to know it's being recorded.
Well, and that's why it says this call is being recorded.
Yeah.
Because that covers all states as opposed to just the one-party states. All right, we got time at least to get a question in from Bob from Henrietta, New York. Hiya, Bob, what's up?
Not so much a question, but I think you might have just said this while I was on and off hold getting ready to talk, but I think the recording announcement, the announcement that this call is being recorded is a federal requirement, isn't that?
No, it's it depends on the state you're in.
Yeah, but federal trumps all of them. Never mind the
It might be. I know in New York, it is a one-party state. So if I decide I want to record a phone call, I don't have to tell you. I can just record it, and that's legal.
But I think the feds require it.
Yeah, if the feds require the announcement, at any rate, the announcement is there, and I can't not have it. So
I'm gonna set that up. I hadn't heard of that. I'm going to see if I can set that up on my iGadget.
Yeah, Steve is saying that it requires a third-party product.
Yeah, there's several third-party apps in the iPhone, but I don't see an automatic way to do it. Yeah.
Oh well, see if you've ever heard of some way to defeat these people who's constantly spoofing new phone numbers. There is one outfit. I'm not going to put the name on the air, but they're a spam. They show up as caller ID, shows as a company name, and I've got well over 100 blocked numbers for that outfit.
Yeah.
They
pick random numbers. They pick someone else's number. They'll pick numbers in your same exchange, so you think it's somebody you know, and so you could end up blocking your friend's number because that's the one that they randomly picked.
They're spoofing the numbers.
Yeah, it's illegal, but there's no way to catch them.
Yeah, well, so spitting on the sidewalk.
Yeah, the FCC has been working on new plans to try to put some sort of security on phone calls so that the number you're calling from matches the number that you're actually doing.
If you want to solve the problem, it's easy to do. You just can't care who you tick off. Just write legislation. Any unsolicited phone call immediately results in a $1,000 fine for the calling company. No exceptions, no BS, game over, they lose. But they don't want to tick people off.
Well, they're also getting paid by companies that make those calls, and they certainly don't want to tick them off because they're not going to get any money out of that.
And there's probably no way to find who's making the calls to begin with, or they would have already stopped.
Sometimes that's true. Don't tell me they can't trace it. I'm sure they can.
All right, look, we got to go. Thanks, Bob.
All right, thanks, bye.
All right, we're going to take a quick break back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites, and you should be voting in the polls during this break right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1 online.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Hi, this is Ray Serafin. Join me Saturday mornings for the Polka Bandstand Show from 10 a.m. till 12 noon on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Now, he's got that goofed up. Now, they should be playing the polka music for that.
He does that just to upright bass. Pork him off.
And then he puts the polka dot music.
Yep.
Just to bug you.
Yeah.
It worked, Rob.
Yeah, he does.
It worked. By the way, welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 36 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. You can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. You can also see that, you can't see yet because I haven't finished with it, but we have 112 volts. 112 volts on the pole, so don't touch it.
Shocking.
113 votes. So thank you all. Let's keep going. I'm very anxious to see how well this works. We're doing well. And those of you who are on the YouTube channel can see I am wearing my Security Tango T-shirt.
Bring up the live so you don't have to wait for the delay.
Thank you very much. So have you danced the tango today? Oh, I'm going the wrong way. Have you danced the tango today along with the logo?
That camera's acting a little slow today.
I'm just very excited about that. Well, how many streams do you have running, and what else you got running in the background? And did you turn off the stream?
The stupid little camera is doing better than the expensive high def camera.
I have that problem with a camera that I just bought.
Yeah,
my little cheap, because it doesn't stress the stream as much because it's showing a lot less a lot fewer pixels. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Roger from Rochester, New York. Hi, Roger. What's up?
Not much, Nick. Just so I made a couple comments. I listen to quite a few podcasts, and several of the podcasts now are adopted. When you talk about these personal devices, is you have an A lady and a G lady,
yep.
And it really works well to express, and nobody has to think about what you're trying to call them. That's one comment. And the other comment is, as some of you might know, I'm legally blind, and I have to use JAWS to use my screen. And unfortunately, 85% of the blind people do have to use JAWS, or do use JAWS. I shouldn't say have to, but there are several choices, but it is by far the most popular. And it requires using Internet Explorer. So I
really?
Just thought I'd toss that out for you. That's all.
Thanks.
So that company needs to get up with the times.
Man, get up with the times.
The JAWS program is a very... very popular program, screen reading program.
Yeah, it's been around for a couple decades.
Yeah.
Yes, it has. And they're working on getting it to work with the new one. But
so in 10 years, they haven't figured out how to get it to move.
10
it doesn't work
more than 10.
No, it's a couple decades. I mean, I was installing.
Well, yeah, since there were viable alternatives to IE.
And JAWS, I think, over time is going to start going away as Narrator. Narrator is getting much, much better, and it's absolutely free on Windows 10. And it is getting much better for the blind. So anybody, I can go to any machine without doing anything, just hold the Windows key and the Control key and Enter, and it'll take you right into Narrator. And I can use any machine anywhere now.
Nice.
For a few years ago, I couldn't do that at all.
Right.
But I just thought I'd toss that out as you're bad-mouthing Internet Explorer. Some of us don't have a choice.
Right.
So
I'm not bad-mouthing the people who use it. I'm bad-mouthing the company that makes it and hasn't.
Oh, I know. I'm not thrilled with it either, but it's what you get. You know?
Yeah.
So, all righty.
All right, so, thanks, Roger.
That's all I had, but I like the A lady and G lady. I thought that's pretty good.
That's pretty good.
Because everybody seems to know what it is when you talk about it that way, you know.
Right,
I told
right,
lady
right.
to do this, or I told G lady to do that.
Right.
And it doesn't take a lot of explanation for people. Have a good day.
You too. Thanks.
Yeah.
And you too can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll-free, 1-800-790-0415, while I read yet another news item. A hack on food delivery service DoorDash leaked the personal data of 5 million customers, delivery workers, and merchants. The breach took place on May 4th, but DoorDash officials didn't learn of it until earlier this month, when they noticed unusual activity involving an unnamed third-party service provider. Data obtained by the attacker could include names, email addresses, delivery addresses, order histories, phone numbers, and cryptographically hashed and salted passwords. Also exposed were the last four digits of the customer's payment cards and the last four digits of delivery workers' and merchants' bank accounts. Driver's license numbers for about 100,000 delivery workers were also accessed. DoorDash has no evidence to indicate people who joined the service after April 5th, 2018 had their data taken. The 4.9 million figure includes only a portion of users who joined Honor before that date. The company says it's in the process of directly notifying those affected. The DoorDash post didn't provide any details about the cryptographic hash regimen used to protect passwords, and a spokes individual's email didn't answer a question seeking that detail. The type of hashing DoorDash used is critical to assessing the severity of the breach. DoorDash's Thursday assurance that passwords have been hashed means little without knowing the specific algorithm or function used. The fact that the hashing routine included a salt is encouraging. That's because when done correctly, it would require more computational might for hackers to crack millions of hashes. But unless DoorDash says more, people should remain highly skeptical of the company's claim that the hashing it used made the passwords indecipherable, and that the company does not believe user passwords have been compromised. In any case, if you're a DoorDash customer, change your password and make it strong and unique. And if you use that password anywhere else, which is a very bad idea, change all of those too. DoorDash says it took action to block the intruder's access after it discovered the breach earlier this month. That leaves open the possibility the attackers had access for more than 4.5 months. Thursday's post didn't address this possibility, and DoorDash spokes individual declined to answer any questions seeking clarification. DoorDash did say that people can call 855-646-6483 if they have questions. Are you a DoorDash user? Change your password and give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. Just like Tom did from Brighton, New York. Hiya, Tom. What's up?
Hi. Yeah. So I've got a laptop with a drive in it that I'm pretty sure is pretty badly infected. I want to run the various utilities to try to clean it up. But generally, the best way to do that is to take the drive out, and run it on another computer. And,
yep.
Right? Is there a way, though, instead of doing that, instead of taking it apart and get the drive out, to just connect, say, a USB cable or something between the two computers and not have to take the infected drive out of the laptop?
Well, that's a great way to infect the other machine.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So don't do that.
No, don't do that.
But the thing of it is, though, well,
you want to turn your mic on if you're going to talk.
Oh, I thought I was.
I thought, we should get somebody in here who knows how to run the board. But
I know.
We just have you.
Leave them alone. Come on.
No, what the problem there is, especially in a laptop, It physically has to come out of the drive because the way it's screwed into the laptop and that connector.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's very tight space that you have to at least lift it up. And so you might, just take it right on out.
If you have a laptop with a CD drive in it, then there are many live CDs of various operating systems that could be used to clean up a system like that because you can't write to a CD, right? Once it's been finalized. So if you had one of those, maybe you could do something there. You can boot, many laptops will let you boot to a USB drive. The problem is those will become immediately infected as well, unless they are lockable. Now, SD cards, the little blue SD cards, can be locked.
Some of them.
Oh, the little tab on it that you slide it over and it locks it.
So what you do is you go to a machine you know is clean.
Right.
And you can put a live operating system on that, generally a version of Ubuntu or whatever, and load the various security Tangle stuff on that, whatever, and then go to your other machine and boot with that thing once you've locked it.
Well, I've taken drives out of laptops before. It's just a little time-consuming, but I thought I'd save some time. But rather than risk, the consequence you just talked about, I'll just go ahead and take it out and...
Right, and you got to still be careful, of course.
Yep.
Because if you do something, if you make a slip, you can then infect the other machine.
Especially if there's a rootkit on it that loads before Windows.
Right.
Right.
Which is another reason to use a Linux boot disk is a Windows virus can't infect Linux.
Right. Linux, yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's an approach. Thank you.
All right. Yeah. Thanks.
Well, sometimes if we're working on a desktop, we'll just pull the cover off and dangle the wires and connect the wires from the desktop to our bench machine.
Right.
But a little trickier on a laptop, because by the time you get to the connector for the hard drive, you've got the hard drive out.
Well, that's where we have this one. Looks like a charger. And you can
Jackie,
slide in.
Jackie calls ours a toaster because you put your drive in it like
yeah,
toast.
Yeah, you put the drives in there and you can hook up the drives and they hook up to a USB port.
Yep.
So, you know, and that's great because you can have your machine going, turn that on, it slowly boots it up safely. You can then do your work and then eject it. And then you're safe to shut it off, but getting all the stuff out. So, like you said, so it can't transport from one drive back onto the other machine.
Who was it who had a switch that turned off the write to their boot drive? Who was that? Somebody did. Somebody did, and they just if they had to fix somebody else's machine, they'd hook the two of them up, flip that boot drive, boot their own machine, do whatever they needed to do.
Because we used to use those jump drives,
yep.
You know, with the lock on the SD card, so nothing could get written to it. So it,
right, same idea. Same
didn't
idea.
Didn't make any difference. You know, we used that even for when we had to go clean people's machines and all that. They couldn't say, "Well, maybe you brought it in." No, I can guarantee you. Well, how could you do that? Because you see this device.
Because I'm a professional. This is what I do for a living. What do you mean, how can I guarantee it?
It's locked. So nothing can get written to it.
Right.
Oh, didn't know they do that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's always been my favorite. They ask you for advice, and then they don't believe you.
Yeah.
Then why did you ask me?
Or can you walk me through this step by step? Probably not. Probably why don't you bring not. It in? Well, I don't want to pay you for it.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
Right.
I want to do it myself. Yeah. Well, then go ahead. Do it yourself.
You're going to charge me. If I bring it in, you're going to charge me.
Yes.
Yeah. That's how we make a living.
That's why we're still here.
Can I come to your business and get your products for free?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. No, that was always...
Now, we do see that. We do see that quite a bit. It's kind of sad, but it is true. And I get it. Everybody, these days, yep. Parlous economic times, yada, yada, yada.
You want as
I get
much
it.
As you can for as little as you can get.
I get it. I do get it. But this is not how these things work anymore. So you got to move on. You got to move on, I guess.
Market pressure has driven prices down and driven margins down. So a company that used to be able to throw in stuff for you just can't anymore because there's no margin.
I love the glory days when you'd go to an expo of some sort and come home with about 6,000 USB drives and tchotchkes galore. I actually came home with a 6-foot-long dirigible.
Nice.
It was amazing. They were packing up. I have been actually presenting at this conference in New York City for PC Expo. And I was walking around while everybody was packing up, and I said to the guy, I just looked at that thing and it was hanging there, and I said, "You want to lug that home?"
Yep.
He said, "Yeah, I have to lug that one, but here's one we never opened. Why don't you take that one?"
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
That's the best time to get the best stuff is when they're packing up and don't want to lug it home.
Yeah, exactly. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Kevin from Greece, New York. Hi, Kevin. What's up?
Hi. I didn't catch the beginning of the first hour where you were talking about a problem with IE. I've been poking around on my Windows 10 machine, and I don't even see IE on it anymore, just Edge.
Right.
So am I okay?
Nope. Internet Explorer is built into the NT kernel. Remember Windows NT?
Oh.
It's still running underneath Windows 10.
Okay.
And so Internet Explorer is built into it, and so you have to do that update. Because this is an active it's actually in there. You could still get it back again. I'm not going to tell you how because nobody wants to do that. But
the icon is maybe removed, but the program is still there.
But Internet Explorer is still built into Windows 10, and so you must do the update because this is an active exploit out there in the wild right now.
Okay, so I went to Windows Update, and it's trying to do 2019.09 cumulative update for Windows, yada, yada.
Yeah.
Is that the right one? Is that going to do it?
This is the latest? It should.
I thought I posted that one.
Yeah, we posted which one it is, and I don't remember off the top of my head, but it's posted.
I didn't hit post.
You should probably hit post on that.
Okay, so it's not specifically identified as IE. Just keep up with the Windows updates. It's KB, somewhere in that cumulative, it'll get it.
KB something or other.
Yeah, they're all KB something or other, but yes.
Yeah, this is KB 451-7211. Yeah, here's the other thing, though. When it finishes doing the install and it says pending restart and I click the restart now button, I get this error message. We're having trouble restarting to finish the install. If you keep seeing this, try searching the web. That's not at all helpful, Microsoft. And then, or contacting support for help. There is no support. And then giving an error code. So it doesn't want to restart from the Windows Update screen.
Right.
So I should just go and do a hard reboot.
Yeah, that's...
Which is also bad.
Which is also a problem. Look, here's the issue. The last year of Windows updates have all been a problem. And some people get hit by this sort of thing that you're experiencing. And a reboot is fine. Sometimes it is not fine. And at that point, your best bet is to get it to a reputable dealer and have them look at it. But step one is, yes, turn it off, restart it again, see what happens. No promises, but if that works, then you win.
Okay.
But I apologize. It's just you're using Microsoft, and in the last year, they have not put out a single update that worked well for everybody.
Okay.
I hate for that to be the answer. I hate it.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
All right. Thank you.
Yep.
Bye bye. Yeah, I hate that answer. But at some point, there's not a thing we can do about it. You know, we're chained. We're handcuffed. There's nothing we can do to make that work. But Microsoft, this is one of the things that's driving so many people to Chromebooks. You know, if you live your life in your browser, particularly if you use Gmail, you don't need Windows at all. And a lot of people are seeing that they have not had one decent update in over a year. And consequently, why are you continuing to do that? Now, again, there are lots of people who have legitimate reasons to run Windows. But if the reason you're running Windows is because you've always run Windows, maybe it's time to rethink that strategy. Anyway, that music tells us we're done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to thank everybody who the whole 180, holy mother of pearl, 180 people have voted in the poll so far. I am honored, thrilled, and delighted that you're doing that. Please keep that up. And we'll be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites, hurtling headlong into our 31st year on the air. Thanks to you, and thanks to the truly great, and truly grateful to you that we can continue to be member-supported Jazz 90.1 on the air and on streaming online at jazz901.org. We will see you in 166 hours.